anything will be used against you in a court of law. Just kidding.
Yes.
But it does take a little while for people to jump on the stream, so we don't have to be all. We'll chat a little bit as people join, and then do the intro thing. But yes, it's been a crazy, crazy few weeks. It's funny because I think a lot of people sort of assumed that you guys did this full time, and it wasn't just a side project with like everything else going on in the world. And yeah.
Well, that is a fair assumption. No, that's a cheeky answer, right? But the you know, we are proud of what we've done, but it has been a side project all along. I did take a leave of absence from my normal job 3.5 years ago to sort of kickstart the development and get a good start on the project, the development of it.
Yeah.
But it's been part time or periodically for some of the other guys, a fraction of their time for some months, and then more time other months as well. So.
Well, Splauk just said, oh, it's live. so at least he's watching. YouTube shows 3 people. Odyssey shows 11 on that side. And so, I think we're already pretty much in business. Let me just check the Twitter, make sure, because it goes out on Twitter usually as well, and a lot of people tend to share that. Yep, that's working as well. 6 watching on Twitter. That's nice. So yeah, the whole world is watching, or like 12 people. I don't know, but that's good enough.
Hello, world.
So hey, everyone. I'm glad you either watched the previous podcast or joining for this one. This is going to be a really good one. I'm going to just roll the intro graphic, and then we'll officially get started with everything, 2 minutes in or whatever. And here we go. Whoops. That was actually not where it was. There we go. Yeah, so hey, everyone. Welcome to the Dash Podcast. Happy Friday, everyone. How's your week been? I have the wonderful pleasure of speaking with the CrowdNode gentleman, Peter Vesberg and Andreas Rudd, both of you co-founders of CrowdNode. And would you mind quickly introducing yourselves? You can go first, Peter.
Sure. Yeah. My name, as Joel said, is Peter Vesberg. I've been enthusiastic about Bitcoin first, and then later the broader crypto scene since exactly 2 weeks after I first heard about Bitcoin and had read the white paper in so that was in June of 2011. I got into Dash in a more serious way following the London conference which I attended. Then I've sort of been thinking about what could I do, except of course just use it as much as possible. And discussing that with my friends, making a lot of my friends annoyed and some others interested. And it just so happened that Andreas and some other wonderful people decided to bite. And we sat down and had a serious conversation about what can we do in this space.
Yeah.
And this was sort of the genesis of what became CrowdNode. And when I'm not being a crypto enthusiast, my day job is I'm a professor at the Technical University of Denmark, and my job there has absolutely nothing to do with crypto or Dash. But I will note that when I first learned about Bitcoin and was excited about it, I thought that there was an overrepresentation of physicists amongst crypto enthusiasts at the time. Of course, dwarfed by computer science people and
mathematicians,
crypto anarchists, and all those guys. But there was a lot of physicists.
Interesting. So, yeah. And how much does that bleed into your job now? Not necessarily your job, but as far as students, do most students know what you do or know what CrowdNode is or things like that?
Well, I mean, the ones that I sort of talk to in a more offline, informal setting, so not related to coursework or projects. But, if we have lunch and talk about all kinds of casual things in life and everything, Sure, I'll talk about crypto, and if the topic falls on crypto, I'll happily share my enthusiasm for Dash and Crowdnode and so on. Yeah. I always put my professional CV. I've had Crowdnode on for years now, so it's something that I'm proud of. It's not something that I you know hide from. And I can also see now that people who have applied for positions with me actually. I have a postdoc who put interest in crypto and Bitcoin on his CV when he applied, even though it was completely unrelated to the job listing I made. So
just because he knew that?
It is coming more mainstream, I would say.
Yeah, for sure. And what about you, Andreas?
What about me? So I would start in a different order of things. I'm a father of two. Young boys, 9 and 10, take up a lot of energy. Married to Katja. And Katja and my oldest son are actually in the COVID quarantine right now. So they're in a holiday house 150 kilometers away from here. So
well, hopefully they're
it's
doing
been a hell of a 2-week roller coaster ride here. But yeah, I'm. By the way, Peter, we called him Professor like 15 years ago. Even before he got the official title from DTU. So it was bound to happen at some point, right, Peter? But yeah, Peter, in terms of crypto, Peter introduced me, I think the following November or December after he learned about it. So yeah, it's been 10 years for me. And it was at a party, a Christmas party, and I bought my first Bitcoin right there and then. And we did have several talks around doing other things in crypto before we ended up 4 years ago on Crowdnode being a ideal project to go for. As for my day job, I'm CTO in a consultancy. We're located in Denmark, but also in the Netherlands, and have customers, all around the globe. But definitely colleagues that are interested in crypto. I think me talking about it every now and then is definitely spreading an interest, but also normal media is definitely affecting everyone.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, before we launch into official business, I just want to remind everyone, of course, if you're watching, subscribe. Most people have already subscribed, but give the like button so stuff goes up. And cointr.ee/thedesertlakes, as you see on the screen, you can throw some Dash and leave a question, and I will answer that. And if you ask questions in the live chat that don't come with Dash, I will be much more reluctant to answer that, but I still might, just in full disclosure. I'm paywalling these guys, kind of, but we'll see. So really quick, what is Crowdnode? And I mean, obviously, it's something I know, but just for the viewers at home, as they say, what is Crowdnode, and why did you see what need did you see that needed to be filled by creating Crowdnode?
Well, I can answer that one. So the basic idea of Crowdnode is really an obvious one, right? I mean, it takes 1,000 Dash to launch a masternode, and these days, staking and sort of making your crypto work for you is very commonplace, and you can do it in a myriad of ways with a myriad of coins, but back in the day it wasn't that common. You certainly couldn't do it with the biggest coins around, like the Bitcoins and the Ethereums of the world, and you could with Dash, but you needed this to pass this 1,000 Dash threshold, which was an awful lot of money and still is. And the basic idea is, of course, to allow people to essentially pool their resources and collect in units of 1,000 and start masternodes on a rolling basis. Every time we essentially have an integer number of 1,000 and then with as little extras possible. Because it's also a problem. Let's say you have 1,500 Dash and you can only make one masternode work for you. You'd be annoyed that you can't do anything with the other 500, and then, heaven forbid, be tempted to change it to something else.
Yeah, of course.
So, I think the need for such a service was very obvious at the time. And so that was really the idea from the get-go. And then, very quickly, we wanted to integrate other things on top of that, like not just access to getting the sort of the rewards that masternodes can give you, but also the influence in the governance system of Dash, which was at the time also a quite unique feature to Dash. Mm-hmm. So that was near and dear to us almost from the beginning.
Yeah. It's so basically... what are the features of CrowdNode? Of course, the big feature is anyone for as little as one dash could stake, as they call it, stake, and then also be able to vote as part of this. And so the other feature is like a lot of these staking services, first off, are on larger platforms like a Binance or something like that, that people don't really necessarily trust as much. But also people don't really like the KYC aspect of it, where you know you have to give government ID for this and that, and then they're just, you know, people who are into crypto are into it because it's permissionless, and the idea of using this kind of stuff is sort of has been a barrier. And so that, for a lot of people, I mean, it's not like it's an anonymous service, but just the fact of not being necessarily being in that kind of a situation it's been a primary appeal for some people, I'm sure.
It has. But actually, if you look at it, mm-hmm. the majority of our members are in, you know, filling out additional contact informations. Mm-hmm. But the advantage of not having, you know, people doing KYC is obvious. But the disadvantage is also obvious, because what we need to not be is a money transmitting entity, right? So we have mm-hmm. this disadvantage right now that when you deposit to us, it has to come from one particular address. And mm-hmm. when you withdraw, we do have to, you know, withdraw to that specific address again. Mm-hmm. And that's the only way that we're allowed to operate mm-hmm. within the rules of the Danish FSA to not do KYC.
Yeah, of course.
And that's also some of, you know, it's cumbersome, so something we want to obviously mitigate and make more easy throughout 2022. Mm-hmm. You know, ideally looking to usernames, identities, Evo, platform stuff when that rolls out on mainnet, right? So that will be a significant improvement in terms of that, and still allowing us to keep a KYC free platform. But it's, you know, there's an aspect of, in all honesty, that we're still flying below the radar. Mm-hmm. At least we're speculating that if we start flying above the radar, it might become a problem. But mm-hmm. And therefore, you know, trustless and developing a trustless feature would be even more beneficial, right? So if it's sitting there trustlessly, then mm-hmm. we're not custodians of it. Then it's not a problem, right? So that's also adding to a very positive effect. Besides bringing trustless to our members and to the community, obviously the risk of having to introduce KYC or becoming a money transmitting entity and doing all sorts of AML is just, you know, less of a worry if it's trustless
and
non-custodial services, right?
Yeah, as a sort of evolution towards this. And of course, a lot of this is it's kind of a figment. It's a result of the way the Dash system is structured, where it's that 1,000 Dash barrier to entry to be able to run a node. And it's because obviously it's better if anyone could, just for one Dash or for however little they have, anyone could just participate in getting staking rewards, so to speak, and governance, and participate in the governance process. The problem is, if you had like 80,000 nodes out there, that would not be ideal for the network, etc. And so it's been interesting to watch, because Dash has sort of kept to its roots as far as for technical reasons. Like, we want the masternode system works, it's secure this way, this much hardware, blah, blah, blah. Like, it all works out very well. But on the other side, on just the people want to get interest and they want to vote part, it seems like Dash has sort of lagged behind a lot of the competition, because those two kind of diverged a little bit. Those two goals seem to have looked diverged as far as the market's concerned. And it's like CrowdNode is always one of those things that's there for people to sort of bridge the gap. And just some people, first off, didn't know about it. A lot of people, for the most part. And other people are like, yeah, I don't want to give up control over my coins. And so that kind of, you know, takes us out to where we're at today. Before we launch into like the whole proposal type stuff, real quick, do you have any insights on the voting system? So when you have masternodes can vote, and a 10% net minimum threshold is required to pass a proposal. So if there's 5,000 nodes, let's just use that number, then 500 yes votes have to be for something to be funded and zero no votes, or 700 yes and whatever. And participation is not extremely high. Like, it's rare that you get 1,000 total votes on a single proposal. And obviously, you know, a lot of people just set up masternodes and just like set it and forget it, right? They're not constantly involved in the process. Do you have any insights on how the little man votes, as in the average, because the crowd node holders, do you have any insights onto how the percentages differ from full masternode holders, or how they, if they tend to vote very similarly, or they tend to vote differently? Do you have any kind of insights over the last several years of this?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a higher participation, far higher participation between our members and what we're seeing on the platform in terms of the voting. That's you know, awesome to see. I think that's really a success criteria. We did also, we do also in some cycles see a significant differentiation, you know, in particular among some of the trust protectors and diff votes. There was a difference. You know, we had a what do you call it, a different exit poll than what actually happened. And as for the normal proposals out there, some things are from time to time extremely different, where you can see that a member is particularly interested in either voting against or for something, and then sort of even puts all hands on deck to make sure that the proportion of our notes would act into his or her favor, right? But it doesn't deviate significantly every time, but sometimes it does.
Interesting.
There's one point I want to add to that. So the point you raise, you know, for instance, what is the level of voting participation for, say, a CrowdNode member that may only have, you know, 10 dash or 20 dash or something, way less than 1,000, compared to masternode owners or even whales with multiple masternodes. And it turns out that the difference in voting participation is not that big. I mean, we a surprisingly large fraction of the dash on CrowdNode choose to vote. I mean, we see a trend like we also see for the big masternodes, like, you know, proposals that ask for a lot of money from the budget or a lot of dash every cycle will generally have a higher voting participation than really small proposals and so on. Controversial proposals might have a higher voting proportion than sort of more non-controversial ones. We see this, we have sort of an inverse parameter we sometimes track, we call the amplification factor. The idea being that all our masternodes vote. So right now we have 25 masternodes, and we typically give 25 votes on every single proposal. Sometimes we only give 23 or 24, and we can talk about why. But mostly they all vote. They don't all vote 25 for or 25 against. It might be 25 split up into, you know, 22 for and 3 against, for example. But we do vote with all of them. So the voting participation for the CrowdNode pool of masternodes is essentially 100%. And that's because the members who don't vote or choose not to vote or even sort of deliberately delegate their vote, they basically just vote in the same proportion as those who do vote. So this is the amplification that I alluded to before. The idea is that, you know, if 20% vote, and it's, say, 50-20 for and against, then all of the crowd masternodes will vote 80-20 for and against, mm-hmm. and not just with 5 out of our 25 potential votes.
Yeah, it's an interesting kind of game theory type thing because, obviously, in terms of like a minimum in the regular DAO, the non-participation of others makes the participation of some more valuable. It already does to a certain extent. It can't, other people not voting can't get you over that minimum threshold. If there's 480 people that like out of 5,000 that like a proposal, no one votes against it, it still can't get passed. But then on the crowd node level, it's that to a greater magnitude where it's that effect plus it's you actually get more votes if fewer people participate. So it's kind of interesting because I've seen some people very interested in promoting crowd node to get as many people on there as possible. And I'm sometimes wondering if like, you know, it's just like a speculation of like, I wonder if like a whale would like throw a couple nodes onto crowd node just to be able to kind of have an outsized influence on that kind of thing. But of course the solution that is just to have more people participate, you know, get more actual voting participation and then, you know, things work out.
Yeah.
Now let's hit on this proposal thing, right? So you guys have a proposal, a funding proposal before the Dash Network, and just pretend I know nothing. What is it all about?
So it's,
maybe we should preface this first by saying that yes. this is the first time we dip our toe in that water. Uh-huh. Everything we've done so far has been completely bootstrapped, mm-hmm. you know, funded. Not so much with our own money, but our own time, especially in Andrea's time, not to put too fine a point on it. And we decided to get really ambitious and make a big laundry list of things we want to do, mm-hmm. But for which there is simply insufficient time on a sort of hobby project basis.
Yeah, of course.
And then the back and forth discussion of options, and then we ended up submitting a proposal.
Mm-hmm. So what all is in this proposal then for people who don't have the Dash Central tab open right now?
All right. So we sort of split it into quarterly deliverables, focusing mm-hmm. the first three quarters on three different major deliverables. Mm-hmm. The first one is what we call the blockchain API, mm-hmm. which is essentially using the transaction chain to send commands back and forth to CrowdNode. Which in the ideal use case that we're talking to Brian Foster and team, mm-hmm. mobile team at DCT with is enabling a swipe to stake feature. So basically using the API and the transaction chain to interact with CrowdNode, the wallet is mm-hmm. able to create a membership, accept the terms and conditions, and then you know, deposit from your mobile wallet onto CrowdNode, and also withdraw back to your mobile wallet mm-hmm. in the case where you're standing in the store and you need to spend something on buying, what do I know, groceries. Mm-hmm. Then you can instantaneously unstake mm-hmm. and withdraw, and then spend your earnings or more on purchasing. So the swipe to stake, or the blockchain API enabling swipe to stake, mm-hmm. is really the ultimate convenience feature, I think, that will definitely boost the sort of usability from a very simple, normal, a normal person perspective using this as a day-to-day, and by this I mean Dash as a day-to-day coin to earn a you know, stake and be able to spend as well, you know, seamlessly. Mm-hmm. So a missing feature that I'm really excited about. And we've also talked to others, so there might be more wallets subsequently implementing mm-hmm. this as well. But the cooperation we are having right now with DCG is definitely the one we're pursuing first to make sure that comes off the bat working and working awesomely, right?
Yeah. So a couple of questions on the particulars on how that's expected to work. Obviously, it doesn't exist yet, So it might, some things might still be up in the air. But so first off, as far as like the one swipe thing, how does that work for what one could call the like the registration of it? Because from my understand, when you join Crowdnode, you have to register. There's like a, there's some like contact information and things like that. And yeah. So how would that work in the mobile wallet?
So basically in the web wallet, you have your unique identifier being the email that you sign up with. But when you're then on the platform, you're subsequently introducing your dash address as the unique identifier, or that, that is in turn a pair that you can't change. So for the blockchain API, there won't be an email address. It will obviously just be the dash address that's going to be the unique identifier. So we would still, until we have a platform, still need to, you know, send commands from this one particular address, receive commands back from that address, make deposits from that address, and withdraw to that address. But what we'll enable to do if you, you know, after you've signed up with the mobile wallet, if you want also to use the web API, we're going to provide a linking mechanism. So you can subsequently sign up with an email and a password and a multi-factor authentication, and then link it with your address as well. So you'll be able to do both.
Basically, when you sign up for staking via the mobile app, so right now there's the linking thing. All you have to do is just hit the stake button, and then it does it, and that's it. That's all you have to do.
A few steps in initiating it, right? You need to go into, I think, like Sam said, it's the section called Explore Dash, where we will be amongst some of the first listed, if not the first, external. Listed in that section, you click on you click on Crowdnode, you accept our terms. Behind the scene, the wallet is then doing the API calls on chain. So you can basically, pay attention on an explorer and see what's actually happening behind the scene. And after, clicking Crowdnode, accepting terms and conditions, you can swipe to stake the amount you want, and subsequently also see your wallet balance next to your Crowdnode balance.
Yeah. And so is there a possibility of your rewards getting paid straight out into that wallet then?
That's a good question. We'll make that as a feature. Right now, rewards are compounding, which obviously, increases your API fractionally, right? But we can definitely make it a feature. So whenever there's a reward coming in, you get the fraction of the reward out into your wallet, which would, if we grow a lot, potentially be more and more eaten up by fees, basic network transaction fees. So it should be a choice if you want to, use the payout directly or let them compound. Nonetheless, we should... And Mark Mason, he's feeling really strong about getting, the alerts or, notifications that you've received a fractional reward. So nonetheless, there will be a feature to make sure your phone says, pling or something, and the icon indicates that something happened, regardless of whether if you're actually having it directly paid
it's
out.
It's a question of dopamine.
Yes.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, that's... It's funny because I price check very rarely, right? On anything. I used to in the past, but now it's just like, whatever. It goes up and it goes down. Who cares? And the only time I check the price is when I'm having to do a calculation that's not in wallet. Usually I just look at my wallet and see it says you have this dash balance, this USD balance, and I just pay from there. I don't care. However, I do have the Bitcoin.com wallet installed because I had to use Bitcoin Cash here and there, and it always tells me what the prices are doing. I get an alert, Bitcoin Cash is down 28% in the last, and I'm like, oh no, that means Dash probably too. And it's like, that kind of stuff is like the bad dopamine. But cling, you got paid, is always like a good little like, oh, it's making money, it's coming in.
And exactly.
Especially like, I don't think that traditional investments can compete with that. Obviously, cryptocurrencies are a different thing, but like, as far as your savings account in a bank, which is a joke these days, but it's like, congratulations, you earned 8 cents in interest this year, or cling, like, who cares?
Negative
like,
interest this year.
Yeah. But when you're
getting, back negative.
So they actually charge you money for keeping your money in the bank?
Absolutely. They'll charge you a fee for having an account in the first place and charge you negative interest for having money in your account. And I'm not making that up. It's real.
Terrible. With inflation too, then it's just like,
oh yeah, that comes on top.
It's such a scam. So the last thing on this, on the Q1 roadmap thingy here is that I saw is the anti-spam functionality. What spam are we talking about here?
So basically when we're using the transactional blockchain as the API, there's a limit to how much, ridiculous traffic we want. And imagine that, the service today, the backend job engine, is running every 30 seconds or so. We'd need to up that to check the blockchain every second, right? Mm-hmm. And if somebody decides to start instant sending, just the minimal, what you can, roughly 600 DUFs minus network fees or the minimal offset, right? That would put a strain on the job engine, an unnecessary one. So it is a potential attack vector that we just need to mitigate. And an anti-spam feature would potentially be that if there's too much traffic coming from the same address or new addresses, but prove some logic that we won't just bounce those transactions like we normally do. If you tried to deposit from an unknown address recently, you would see that your deposit pops back into your wallet if it's below a certain amount. If it's above that amount, we want to inspect it manually. But the feature of bouncing it back would be something we would then restrict to simply avoid an overload. So it's basically making sure that it's not exploited. For the sake of the network and not bullishing our hot wallet either, right? So there's a multi-purpose there.
And so now we go to the next quarter, right? Which is in my view, the fun quarter. And we've been talking about this for pretty much all year in terms of this kind of thing. And it's been one of the more exciting things I haven't been able to talk about for a while. And I've been messaging Peter. I have like a long, like almost my entire message history with Peter. It's like, hey, how's it going? And he just knows I'm going to ask, you want to come on the podcast? And now it finally happened, But so trustless staking is possible with Kurdash functionality. Trustless staking using a multi-sig functionality. And obviously, and it seems like a lot of these bullet points also like are just not promising things to be done. It's just like saying it's difficult, difficulty relies on getting good UX and et cetera, et cetera. I have participated in a trust minimized, let's say, masternode before via this multi-sig type of a thing, where instead of, one person holding all the funds, it was a wallet where all the money went in, all the transaction, a refund transaction was signed by all parties, but not broadcast. And so at any point, one person could hit the button and dissolve the node and get a refund. And so that's kind of where I was at, but that was a lot of messing around in Electrum to get that to work. So basically, why don't you just roll through what it actually takes to get this thing done, to make semi-trustless.
I can get the ball rolling on this one.
Yes.
So, okay. So basically what you describe is very close to what we want to do, and the same basic technology we want to exploit, because this is what is possible with the way Dash works today. So the basic premise is exactly what you say. You have a number of people coming together, deciding to chip in. And let's say five people or so decide that they want to make a masternode together, and they all contribute 200 Dash, for example.
Mm-hmm.
okay, this is possible, then what you do is that you you basically have all the participating people sign with their own keys that they keep secret this reimbursement transaction, which takes the note down and transfers 200 dash back to mm-hmm. every depositor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now there's several problems with this, from a practical perspective. For example, it's maybe you know that you want to do a set it and forget it type of thing. I'm not interested in someone bailing on the masternode that I'm in, you know, the day after yeah. tomorrow, and then I have to do all this signing stuff we can talk about again, and I have to find a new pool, and I'll have waiting time, and it sucks. I want to have a set period of, you know, a year, or half a year, or 2 years, or whatever, but something that's a non-trivial amount of time. So how do you reconcile the idea that everybody has a sort of, we call it an eject transaction, but basically the transaction that sends all the dash back to all the original depositors. Mm-hmm. How do you reconcile that with not being able to do it ahead of time? And the obvious answer is some kind of time lock. You can make the eject transaction time locked, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you might also be in a situation where somebody really, really, really wants to take down the node because, you know, whatever, their house burned down and they need a place to stay or whatever. Like something has happened in their life. They need the money right now. And if it's time locked and that's the only thing you have, then you're screwed. And that might deter some people from joining into such a setup.
Yeah, of course.
So we figured that we have to supplement the time locked sort of main reimbursement transaction or eject transaction with individualized transactions, so that let's say that we three decide to pool our resources together in a masternode, then you deposit something, I deposit something, Andreas deposits something, but we all get our own special, only for me, only for you, only for Andreas, pre-signed transaction, which allows the money to also to be sent back, but with a penalty to the one who broadcasts it. So the idea is that if the version that is mine, my private one, so the Peter transaction, if I decide to submit that to the or broadcast that on the network, we all get our money back, except I get less. I get, you know, whatever I put in minus some penalty that, for instance, could go to the other pool members, so that there's something in it for you and you sort of get compensated for the extra work you have to go to be subjected to if you have to go out and find a new pool and so on. And we think that this is basically necessary even for an MVP type of setup.
Mm-hmm.
So that there is the main transaction which sends all the money back with no penalty for anyone, which is time locked. And then each of the participants get an extra one which sends everybody back except a little bit less for me or whoever submits their version. Obviously I can't submit your version where you get less because I don't have that one. And this kind of
reminds
me
of the Lightning Network a little bit.
This is the key. But that also means that there's even more signing to set this thing up than you alluded to. It actually scales with the square of the number of participants in the pool.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need, quite a bit of setup to both for our backend to basically prepare all these transactions in a smooth way and collect the signatures. And this has to be, this cannot be a situation where everybody has to be online at the same time. And this has to be able to be done on a sort of quasi sequential setup or, you know, non-synchronous. And secondly, it has to be, I hesitate to say user friendly, but it has to be not too much trouble and not frightening. Because, you know, most people have never signed a multisig transaction in their life. And it looks scary. And if you do it in Dash Core, it'll actually give you error messages even when you're doing it right, which just adds to the fun.
That's terrible. So, but yeah, it's exciting.
It will work, yes. Right?
But the it does work, is... but it'll give you an error message, and you're supposed to say, "Okay, that's what I want," and paste that back in. Sorry, whatever. Yeah.
But the whole point is, what would be ideal is obviously to get a wallet provider to do all this signing behind the scenes for the user. So back to convenience, and we had a chat with that at Dashameter a couple of months back, and he mm-hmm. suggested that, you know, after launch of the incubator web wallet, if we can sort of incentivize him to continue working on the web wallet, that might be a feature worthwhile doing for the incubator web wallet, right? So it mm-hmm. does, you know, all the signing behind the scene, and you can potentially, even if that's the case, go to a larger number of participants on the masternode, because it would scale automatically.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that would be the optimal. So swipe to stake would be sort of there trustlessly as well.
Yeah. So in the Q2 iteration, obviously there's a lot of variables here. But let's just, from a user perspective, the user has a wallet, and before they were doing swipe to stake, and it just gets sent to you guys, and you handle everything. But then when you have the multi-sig trust minimized version in there, what would happen with the user on the end user level? Like, let's just say I tell people, I say, like, I have a friend at some meetup, I'm like, oh, guess what, you remember that you could stake like 3 dash or 10, let's just say 20 dash, let me a little less teeny, you can like stake 20 dash and you get interest on it that then you can spend all over the place, and you don't really lose control of your money. You never can, or trusting someone to not run away with it. And like, oh, this is awesome. So they download the wallet. They put their 20 dash in. They're like, I'm going to get so much interest on this. And then they go hit the stake. Or what happens at that point? What's the rest of this? Complete the story right there.
I mean, I see three different sort of levels for the what we, I think we're going to realistically achieve in Q2. And I base mm-hmm. that on not relying on any further development from any wallet or any third party, except for what we are saying we will do in Q1, which is integrating with the Dash web. Not the Dash phone wallet, right? The mobile mm-hmm. wallet. So the way I see it is, if you want to, the easiest way to use Crowdnode for a trivial amount of Dash, you know, just mm-hmm. one Dash or a few Dash, would be to simply just install the Android app or whatever and use it directly. Swipe to stake, you're good. It's trusted, mm-hmm. And you live with the risk, because if you lose one dash, it's hopefully not the something that'll ruin you financially. Yeah. And it's just the convenience. Super easy, you know, click and forget. The second tier is what we basically already have. You sign up with a sort of a real profile, and you use Crowdnode the way you can do right now. And you hopefully, if it's larger amounts, you use a hardware wallet or, you know, air gap computer or something like that, so that you handle your keys with slightly more respect than people typically handle their cell phone. But then the third tier for even more serious stuff, I think, would be the trustless version. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's going to be for 20 dash. I mean, it's probably going to be 100 dash minimum, something like that, because, well, it depends a little bit on how we make the setup, but we certainly don't want to risk 20 to have set up a masternode with 50 20 dash deposits. That would be basically be insane with mm-hmm. the current setup. But then to answer your question, how does this work in practice? In mm-hmm. in an MVP and with only using what we know for sure can be done right now, mm-hmm. it would be a lot of copy pasting commands in Dash Core. So you basically, you go to the website, you say, okay, I commit to joining a pool for this and this amount. Mm-hmm. And then when the pool is sort of ready to go, we've collected 10 people or however many people, we'll basically say, okay, copy this into, you know, debug console of your Dash Core and press enter and paste the result back in this window. And then you do this a number of times. And when everybody has done that, then the masternode is started, and the funds are no longer in our hands. It's living on this multisig address.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not ideal, and we'll have a lot of pedagogics to handle, show the users exactly how this is done, you know, what to expect, what the inputs and outputs look like, what it looks like if something goes right, if it goes wrong, and all that. But basically, mm-hmm. it is really just a copy paste exercise.
Mm-hmm.
But if we want to do it even more seamless than that, we would probably need some some more direct integration with something like you know, Dash Electrum or some other wallet.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. It's so basically the MVP trustless staking feature would be something that would be on a more advanced level. So it's like, okay, well, you're a basic person. You have 2-3 Dash, you throw it on the trusted system. And at some point when you get up to like 100 Dash, hopefully you've learned enough by then that you can graduate to this kind of more, you know, self-custodial system where it's, I guess, all the copy-pasting commands into Dash Core reminds me of submitting a proposal, right? Because you do a lot of that. You go to the proposal generator, the wizard, and copy-paste this there, copy-paste that, copy-paste. And that's not very hard. I mean, for, it's not a, your grandmother can use it, that's for damn sure. But it's not very hard for anyone who has ever, like, just knows what a command line is, even if you don't use one on a daily, like maybe I do, but like, you just don't know what it is. And would you consider it to be, again, obviously we're comparing a thing that doesn't exist yet, right, with a lot of variables, but do you think it would be on par with the difficulty of submitting a proposal through Dash Central's system? Or do you think it would be more complicated, or do you think it would be like less complicated?
I think the complexity level is comparable. There might be a little bit more copy pasting to do, mm-hmm. more steps. But I think the main thing is it's more intimidating, mm-hmm. because, you know, if you're putting on 100 Dash or even more, you're always thinking in the back of your mind, you know, maybe I'm going to do something wrong and lose my 100 Dash, right?
Yeah, of course.
When you're submitting a proposal, it's only quote unquote 5 Dash if you screw it up completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think it's not so much the amount of work or the time it takes or anything like that. It's basically mitigating the fear that you mess it up.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key.
Yeah.
And another thing this requires, and this is really essential, because this system is truly out of our hands. I mean, once the masternode mm-hmm. is set up with the funding transaction, it's living on this multisig wallet. There is absolutely no way that we can help people somehow recover their, you know,
their lost money,
their access to. If this was all set up using a wallet, the private key that they've now definitively lost,
mm-hmm.
tough luck. I mean, unlike now, where, you know, the money, the Dash is basically in our control, and we can help people if we go through a lot of hoops. In that situation, you know, you're toast. If you lose your keys, you lose your crypto.
Yeah.
So it's a convenience versus I don't want to trust anyone.
But I don't mean, just to be clear,
we would prefer that all the Dash on our platform was in this trustless way. That makes every our lives much easier and sleep better at night.
Yeah, it's funny because I still get transaction anxiety sometimes, not when I'm doing basic payments like, hey, paying a bill here or there, but it's whenever I'm doing something bigger out there. And like, for example, on a weekly basis, I probably send 60 to 100 Dash transactions alone. Part of it's through the marketing hub that I pay out to people, but also part of it's just shuffling my own stuff around or paying bills and things like that. And so despite being quite versed with that, there's still like, there's still like a little bit of that anxiety that comes with that kind of stuff. So I definitely understand that. But the thing is about decentralization, it's a journey to it. And tools are a lot easier today than they were before, but it's still a little bit of a challenge. Like a few years ago, when I started doing stuff with Dash in like 2016 or so, I got a new computer and then I installed Linux on it and Ubuntu, you know, the easy Linux, whatever. And it's still like, it works pretty great, but there, like over the years, the amount of like headache times when I'm looking through like Stack Overflow things to figure out how to get my computer from back, there's been a few of those nights still where I had to do that. And then learning to do work with VPNs, like all this kind of stuff is just, it's the people who want to can kind of go in this direction. And so, I mean, I do think the thing is like KYC is, as I mentioned before, is a barrier for a lot of people. It's a couple, and I kind of almost forget about this sometimes because I don't really use KYC services. Like, that's part of my living on crypto thing. I try not to do that. And so, like, as part of that, like, there's that certain anxiety when you, like, give over your financial information. It's like daddy's watching you, or it's not just like giving a piece of cash to someone. And so I cannot imagine anyone who would be too intimidated to, for example, deposit in the trusted system. Like, oh no, that's too much for me. Who would not be willing to take the steps to do in the trust minimized system? You know, I can't imagine a person who won't do this and won't do that either. I mean, they'd probably be okay with that level of risk, or they'd be, if they're serious enough about that, they'd be advanced enough to be able to kind of go through that sort of level. So that sounds pretty good. Let me see. I got a question from one time. What did he say? He just said, how much is the penalty? The penalty in this hypothetical situation where if someone wants to break the time lock ahead of time in this system, what would the penalty be? What might it look like?
I don't know if we've actually settled that completely. There's a debate to be had on what the right level is. I don't know. Andreas, do you have a number for that?
So some of the talks we had was, you know, if I'm partaking in a trustless setup, the time lock is set for the defunding transaction to execute in a year, the penalty max would be what I would earn in rewards in a year. It wouldn't make sense to make the amount greater than that.
So you basically forfeit all your own rewards.
Exactly. And potentially, you know, then some or less. But what we can't do is distinguish what the penalty will be over time. So we can't make it smaller. It has to be a penalty that's, you know, even though you're 5 days away from having completed the year, will still be the same as if you're 5 days into a year, right? So
yeah, of course.
But that would sort of be the maximum that would make sense to add as a penalty. But yeah, we haven't settled it, and we are really interested in hearing the input and maybe even just weighing in, you know, on the platform what would seem acceptable.
But
it would correlate with how much time you're locking it in, right?
Yeah, of course. Now we'll just go to Q3, get through the roadmap, and then kind of go more general. And by the way, if you guys have questions along the way, cointr.ee/thedesertlinks, throw a little super chat thingy in there and it'll answer them. There's some people, by the way, who are in Discord who are throwing me tips there and then messaging me somewhere else because they just don't want to deal with the coin tree. So there's some of those. There one from Splowk, which I'll save after we finish this whole list, just so you know. I'm not ignoring you. So Q3 would be platform support, meaning usernames and identities, and with a significant usability increase, you know, or user experience increase, and no need to rely on a single address anymore. Of course, pending the actual rollout of platform and adoption amongst miners and masternodes and all that kind of stuff, all that activation. Yes. So you seem very excited to talk about this. Go ahead.
Well, it's basically, you know, the befriending CrowdNode, doing the handshake of the respectfully known addresses that will be unknown to everybody else, will add a level of convenience that would be unparalleled to what we're seeing today, but still very easy to explain to the Danish FSA if they're starting to questioning it, right? Mm-hmm. So I would have wanted to do this a long time ago, but your platform is what platform is.
Non-existent.
I think we're targeting this in you know, a timely manner, I hope, as to when we at least would expect something out there. But it would save us a lot of hassle. You know, all those red warning messages, don't send from, you know, use the same address, and all the explainers would be obsolete at that point in time. And that would be awesome. I think simplifying the use case a lot for everyone, even even, you know, we talk trustless, it's sort of the requires a really high maturity level of our members. But just the normal usage today still requires you to know what coin control is and using the right change address and have an idea of that. So we would have an easier entry level for those that are not so savvy in terms of understanding what is an input and if it's coming from the right address or not, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. It just, did it go to you or not?
But it also opens up for something that we haven't written, but I think is obvious, that we, as soon as possible, should stop using the transactional blockchain as our API. So the moment we get Evo, I would hope I have time to start, you know, also implementing a API through platform, the platform chain. So we also have that, but that's not a promise, and you're not seeing that on the roadmap. But I think the implementation of platform support for users and befriending, I hope, and it shouldn't take all 3 months to do. So there will be room for more, which I think, if there's no question, is sort of also sliding onto the additional and extra and bonus things that we put in the proposal, that are minor things, that I want to see done as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. So let me just see if this can pop up on the screen. Because he did get a super chat. Said, what exactly does Crowdno need from Dashcore in order to be fully trustless? Will the next core release include any features that could be helpful towards this goal?
I don't think I'm not aware of any new features in the next core release that will somehow be a silver bullet in this context.
Mm-hmm. No, we don't really need anything, but we would like to get rid of that, you know, we call it ridiculous quotation marks, you know, the what looks like an error message that's basically behind the scenes stating that everything went all right.
Yeah, but the message isn't fully signed yet.
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
That would help the convenience, you know, trusting the trustless setup process, basically, because it seems like, you know, you get a red message, and but you do get an output as well, and you're thinking, is this right? It looks wrong, but it is actually right. And
yeah,
you're one step further into the process. So that would be a minor thing, but a really good thing in terms of conveying to the members that you are on the right path to trustless.
Yeah.
But what we're proposing is what's possible today. But I can imagine several things that would make it easier if there were some additional development on Dashcore. But you know, that also, and let me just touch it, you know, we do know, seeing that there are some designs for trustless masternode shares being discussed or have been discussed. There's nothing, you know, settled yet, and there might not be for several months, maybe for a longer time. That's just, you know, the designs regarding DCG developed shares, masternode shares concept. But what I see coming there, you know, almost unrelated to how much a share will be, if it's 50 dash for a share, there's still going to be a purpose for us to sort of, you know, source people up to potentially then 50, right? Or even source the 20 shares of 50 into a masternode. So so there's still going to be room for that as well. Just complementing what we're able to do right now, but I, you know, it's to my knowledge not set in stone when there will be masternode shares, you know, on-chain trustless rolling out. So that talk it's not irrelevant, because I would love when it does come, but it's not what we're promising. We're definitely promising the trustless as can be implemented right now, and then as soon as the other thing hits, we'll implement that as well. But I'm not expecting to see that in Q2. I'm maybe expecting that end of Q2 that the designs might be in a draft there, but
Yeah, that makes sense. And by the way, Pasta wants you to message him after this about the error message. So
cool.
Hopefully, yeah, it's awesome. Worked out.
By the way, we should say that this whole concept is basically Pasta's brainchild.
Yeah, he's got a lot up in there in that big bowl of noodles, huh? going on.
No, Pasta, not noodles.
Yes, of course. I call him noodles. Different recipe. Like it. It's funny because I had him on the podcast a few times, and I used one time I tried to use a different bowl of spaghetti. And he got very angry, or not angry, but he was like, no, that's the wrong one. Use this. It's kind of funny how that works. But then on the other throughout 2022 stuff is just a whole bunch of different improvements like language packs, data export improvements, fiat denominated reward table, exchange rates, tax calculations, ROI for new members, improved UI, all this kind of stuff. And so, yeah, it sounds like a great project. And you guys are asking for 85 dash per month. And then there's this thing about the diff. Before we get into the diff part, though, Splawick did ask a question up here, which was, what did he say? He's, I don't know if he deleted it. Oh, he said, Andreas, are you going to quit your CTO job for good, or at least the next 12 months when providing the features you've described in the proposal?
That's an awesome question. Because it actually ties into where will we be in a year, and that's a very difficult question to answer. So in a year, if we are to be a good investment, or at least a solid investment for DIF, and to maintain sort of the same operational expenditure, including salaries, we would need to grow to 175, 190 masternodes. Depending on the exchange rate a little bit, but in the ballpark of where it is today. And, I don't think the trees necessarily grows that much into the sky in just 1 year.
Of course.
So there's sort of, the extremes, if we talk the extremes that we're self-sustainable and we have 190 masternodes, which would be awesome, would be, yes, then I'm no longer a CTO at all, right? And I won't be for the period, at least for as long as we're funded. And I might not even be afterwards anyways, because they would need to, want me back. And that takes us to the other extreme, right? If we deliver everything on the roadmap and we're sitting end of 22 and thinking that's good, let's go back to just doing this part-time and, what we've been doing for the last 3 years, Then it's interesting for DIF as well to get some of the dividends from the equity that they're holding. So that's the two extremes. I would say I would want to continue on CrowdNode full time. That's my clear preference. But if we're not at 175, 90 masternodes, we would need to maybe do a seed round. A proper one, but there are some ways in between where I can go part time and we still won't be a minus in terms of the books, right? And then there's the extreme where we're back to basically just doing this part time. But I would love to continue, and that's why I think what's actually really important is to end of 22. And I would love that we're even looking at this, basically right off the bat. What are our other growth potentials for CrowdNode? And one of the things that some see that in the near future ThorChain will be a competing thing for CrowdNode, right? Let's mitigate that right away by looking at the mechanisms of our liquidity pool in ThorChain. The bigger it is, the less slippage there is. So a theoretical higher yield for the biggest pool is what sort of might incentivize those that really don't care about trustless, but just wants to, want to have Dash, but wants the highest API on their Dash to place their portfolio in Crowdnode's Thorchain liquidity pool. That might be great for them, obviously. So you're sort of able to balance your portfolio, some in the normal approach, trusted, some in Thorchain, some trustlessly. Others are suggesting that we sort of not do the Celsius model, but something with, lending. I don't like that concept right now, but there's good ideas that we're looking at, obviously. But for DIF, what might be interesting, and also as a founder and co-owner of Crowdnode, would be to copy paste this concept onto other coins, right? That would present a significant chance of growth. That might, be interesting to for a venture capital to also look at. But we are, and I think, everybody knows this, everybody who's met us, we are very loyal to Dash, and we love Dash, and we've been on board for 4 years plus, right? So we're not going to jump ship. But what might be great about looking at it from a sort of multi-currency perspective is that if we end up with our service in a multi-currency wallet, it might have a spillover effect to Dash, which could benefit the network end of day as well. So many options. But the point was, back to your question, originating from Splavik, I would love to continue the business development of Crowdnode. That would be my preference. But I'm not 20. I do have a wife, two kids, and a house. So I don't want to, risk things, too much. I am definitely willing to take it. And I think that is also what we're doing here. But a very positive upside and an interesting upside for Dash and me personally. I think for Crowdnode, definitely also.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned in the beginning, we've all been around for not one or two, but multiple bear markets. So we know what it's like.
Oh, yeah.
These things happen and they hurt.
Strap yourselves in for another one, huh? But,
Yeah, exactly. I mean, probably within the period we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
More likely than not.
Now, I particularly like the idea of I hate to say it to my Dash audience, but I like the idea of expanding to other projects wherever you can to expand to as much business as possible. And in some cases, so I have an interview scheduled next week for the people who are involved with Smart BCH, the Bitcoin Cash kind of Ethereum bridge project thing. And for example, I believe things like that, even though it's not a staking coin, do have a staked element for the smart contract platform, for example. And so I'm sure get in on that thing, maybe, allow people to pool in that kind of way, charge a fee or something like that. There's a lot of opportunities to take this technology and expand it to other things. And the bottom line is, if you're making profits off of this and the DIF has equity, how is that a bad thing? And that's been one thing that I believe has been first off, the fact that there was no DIF to take equity in the past, I would say it was a mistake, but it wasn't a possibility. So it wasn't a mistake, but it's a shame that during the 2017 bull run, the DIF couldn't just buy Coinbase and just wasn't around to just do something like that. But at the same time, I have realized that a lot of the early Dash ventures were a little too focused internally, just a little too much we'll do our own thing, and not as much in getting out there into the crypto world and making friends with everyone and doing cross-chain compatibility and atomic swaps with this and then getting on all these things. There's too many Dash exclusive things being built back in the day. And, I think that I'm not sure if that's was from hubris a little bit, or if it was from just not thinking big enough yet to be, everywhere. But I think that the best thing the Dash can do is the problem with Dash is that it has too few friends in high places. Like the the large institutions of the world, of the crypto world, just aren't super into Dash. They don't care. They're not doing any special favors. They're doing lots of special favors for their own favorite projects. For example, Bitcoin. And you know, Bitcoin's everyone's top, everyone's first, kind of. And Dash has kind of been, you know, left by the wayside. But that's, it made me very happy that the partially Dash owned Valkyrie had like the first Bitcoin ETF. And it's like, now you have this company that's, you know, very popular. It's front page news for a long time, and among maximalists and stuff too, then tweeting little fact sheets out about Dash and stuff on the regular. And that's way better than having like a Dash only version of Valkyrie, you know, just out there somewhere. And so I would really encourage that. And also sustainability, like the DAO can only pay for things for so long, and having sustainable business models. You know, I think everyone should be making money off of Dash, right? And the Dash adjacent business, and not just, you know, just anyway, that's a little bit of a rant, but yeah.
No, but it's a good point, right? And it was also a strong point for Diff, and you know, in their internal talks or talks in the board, right? If we only stick to Dash, it's less interesting as an investment, right? But copy pasting the concept onto other coins is definitely a factor, something in terms of what can we earn the diff in rewards or in dividends, and basically you know, create a more internal value for Dash, right? So it's I love the ramp you went on.
Yeah, and I like the mentioned Thorchain in this context, because Thorchain is simultaneously a competing system and extremely different at the same time, because the base competition of that is put your Dash somewhere, get more back. You know, that's on the base kind of thing, especially in smaller than 1,000 units. Now, of course, the difference is for any amount, it's not purely trusted, and it's smooth. But on the other, and possibly the APY would be a lot higher, but also there's a lot more risk in there, because first off, your token has to be split 50-50 Dash to Rune. And what happens if Rune dumps, even though Dash is doing great, then like, you know, you could not be doing super well. And then also, of course, Thorchain was hacked a few times. And recently there was a consensus problem, and then they had to roll everything back, and now the trading is resumed as of, I believe, today. So there's just all this stuff that could happen. And also, you can't vote at all in Dash Treasury proposals. And so it's like possibly a lot more money, or possibly better things in some ways, but then you make all these like risks and sacrifices, whereas if you want to be pure Dash. But what I could see that happening is, like right now, if there was one masternode, you'd get a giant reward on that one masternode, but it's split amongst thousands of nodes, right? The masternode block reward, right, is split amongst all the nodes. And so the more nodes you have, the less you make. However, when you have the option to make money on Crowdnode, I mean, not on Crowdnode, on Thorchain, now all of a sudden, if half the masternodes leave and make more money over there, then the remaining half double, and it makes it, so Dash is more attractive than, let's just say, Bitcoin Cash to stake on Thorchain, because they're competing with masternodes and vice versa. It ups it for everyone, which is pretty cool.
And you could also argue that there might be some MNOs sitting out there that are in it for the rewards that might, you know, and aren't participating in the voting cycles either. So you know, to greatest extent, that seeing a natural balance kick in there would obviously, you know, be beneficial for those that are still strong Dashiers and keeping their masternodes. We are seeing, you know, the block rewards are going down over time, right? So so over time, it will be, you know, less interesting to have a masternode. But if then over time more masternodes are finding other places for their Dash, and we will have this equilibrium going on forever. So it's sort of beneficial on that level, definitely. But it's also, you know, I imagine, and I have a visualization that I mentioned this, that as a member on GroundNode, I can sort of place my portfolio in you know, with 4chain that's risk minimized, trust minimized, right? It's not trustless. We are introducing a counterparty or a third party risk, right? I'm not a fan of that. But if if you are a, I don't know, yield seeker, then by all means do it, and we'll provide a valuable service for those that wants, you know, that to be easy. If they don't want to get to know how to do all the Thor chain stuff, and they already have an account with us, basically just you know, put your portfolio in that, and we'll manage it for you. You might even get a higher yield than actually going about finding a pool, and it's a smaller pool, and it's it has more slippage and all that stuff. So, yeah, I like the equilibrium in it.
Yeah, and another part that kind of reminds me with the equilibrium thing is, obviously, like, say if you have an exchange and you sign people up for it, you get a referral bonus if they have a program like that. And think about if we go to, for example, if you go to ThorChain, you don't have, they don't have a referral program that I know of, because it's like a protocol. They don't really have that, but they don't need to, because if you, like, let's just say I have 50 Dash in the Dash pool there and I get people to use it, the more they use it, the more money I make. You know, you kind of, it's a self-incentivized system, but that's something to look forward to, is as platform comes out, then you have more and more people not just sending money, but using data operations on platform, which generates fees, which goes to masternodes, which then CrowdNode gets. So, for example, imagine if you had a balanced Dash ecosystem portfolio, let's just say half and half into, half is into ThorChain, which honestly, if the Dash side doesn't pick up that much, you still have Rune. And if everything else is doing well, your Rune still goes up. So that's fine. But then the other half, you have it in the masternode ecosystem via CrowdNode, to where if people are using a bunch of like decentralized applications over there, all that kind of increases. And so you become an investor in an ecosystem. And that's been one of those things that has been tricky with crypto, is in the early days, you just bought and held and that's it. Or, and that's a huge risk, because sometimes what if the price doesn't do well, then you're screwed. But then, okay, well, then you have staking rewards where you buy and you hold, but then you get interest for staking. So even if the entire, the price doesn't do well, you still get more on top of that, and it's better. But now we're hitting the levels of investing in the ecosystem, where it's, you could buy, hold, and stake, but also usage, even if the price doesn't do super well, or even if the staking levels isn't enough to offset, usage pays off. The business side of things pay off. And so some people would be like, oh, my masternode, I'm thinking of selling my masternode, I don't like the way the Dash price is performing. But like, what happens if you have a wildly successful dApp, for example, that runs on Dash, and it just, it's only in one part of the world where like it doesn't hit headlines, speculative investors don't see it, but it's generating a lot of activity and a lot of fees, then you don't care. And so it's the same thing. Or if like, what happens if everyone's trying to like sell their Dash for Bitcoin on ThorChain, but then you get part of that fee, and then it becomes more attractive to hold Dash, and then people buy back Dash to stake it. It all works out together. And so that's something that's hopefully will get a lot of people really excited in investing in the Dash ecosystem as a whole, not just I buy the unit, you know? Fun yes. Little rant. anyone has any other questions, please let me know. I will check the rest of these things. In the meantime, how profitable, generally speaking, do you think the crowded model is, as far as like the cost for labor? Has it mostly been a labor of love, or has it actually been like a little bit of a side income over the years? If you don't mind just, you know, volunteering that information, I guess.
Well, when we conceived the idea, Dash was well and above $1,000. And we sat there saying, okay, five masternodes, and we might actually be able to just cover our operational cost. And then the rate just went, you know, it basically went all the way down to $35. And in that process, we held on to all of the Dash, the earnings on the platform, while, you know, lending or covering the operational expenses from our own wallets, personal wallets, in the hopes that it would get back to, you know, sort of higher levels again, you know, hitting 500. Okay, I can't go down from here. Hitting 300, can't go down from here. Crossing the 800, you know, 100 Dash barrier, crossing the $80 barrier where you know, people were talking, it can't go below that because then DCG won't even be able to cover their cost, and all the way down to 35.
Yeah, of course.
So and throughout all of this, we were still spent time on it. And I still spend time on it. So love is definitely an element. I think it's fun. It has also literally been a hobby, you know. 10 years ago, I got my first son, and that sort of killed some of the classical "I'm a young man" hobbies, right? And when they grew older, it was fun to do something again that I think ideas in crypto, and also the idea of you know, I've known Peter for basically it's soon 30 years, and with small kids and day jobs, we don't get to see each other that often. And that goes for the other Peter and Thomas as well. So there was a lot of motivation that made this love on multiple levels. But the time is still scarce, and there's a multitude of things I want to do that I think would be beneficial for the ecosystem. And you know, hypothetically, we could do this over 5 years as a hobby, but then maybe it will be too late, and Dash would, you know, when we conceived the idea, Dash was a top 10 crypto as well. What are we ranking at right now? Right, we need to put back Dash on the radar for a lot of people in crypto because it has so much potential. And it's an awesome coin. The governance and all the things that Dash did, sort of first mover-ish. We need to at least stay on par with other coins. And that's what I really want to do.
To also belabor the Joel's question a little bit. The answer is we've been putting fiat in and time. We've not been taking any kind of salary out, any of us. But we have been, of late, been able to more than cover sort of the third-party supplier costs, so hosting and software services and things of that nature. And I mean, you can do the math right now. If you consider 25 masternodes, it's pretty easy to calculate with our flat rate fee what our sort of top line revenue is. And as a hobby, it would be a nice side income for sure, but on the other hand, it's not enough to really call it a business. And it's also part of the story, I think, that for most of the time since we launched, it's true that when we conceived the idea, Dash was at 1,000, but by the time we launched, it was I don't know 200 or something. And so if you look at the curve over our existence, the average Dash price, I doubt it's above 100. To be honest, it's down on that level. So it's basically been bare bones, and we've been, we've been through a healthy process of cutting costs also along the way, actually.
Yeah, as any good business should. Again, hobby, but
yeah. Yeah, but business. You know, it's sometimes you only get to do that sort of stuff when circumstances necessitate you doing it. I mean, if you have the luxury of being quite profitable from the get-go, you kind of get lazy. We've basically had to tighten the belt quite a few times because we're basically bleeding fiat.
Well, that's good that you managed to make things work despite all that. Now, we got a question. How many CrowdNode users vote actively each month? 80%? So obviously there's...
Touched on that question at the beginning. The answer is less than 80% of the members vote, and also less than 80% of the sort of money staked on the platform vote. I'd say mm-hmm. something that gets a really high vote, Andreas, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's rare that any, let's say we have 25,000 Dash on the platform. I think it's very rare that more than 10,000 of those Dash actually vote on a given proposal. Typically, it's maybe, I don't know, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 or something like that. However, yeah. as I explained with the multiplication, all of the 25 masternodes actually cast votes mm-hmm. with the odd exception that sometimes people choose to actually vote, don't vote. And we respect that. And so we might only have 24, 23 votes cast. Sorry, mm-hmm. Andreas, you were saying?
I think it's actually around 40%. But I haven't checked recently.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't checked recently. But last time I checked, it was around.
But it's definitely less than 80.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting thing to think about, because what happens when you introduce in-wallet voting features, right? Where you just...
Hallelujah. That's what happens, Joe.
Yeah. Because honestly, if I... So for example, there's a certain Clubhouse / co-working space I'm a member of, and they allow me to pay dues in Dash. And so I get an email invoice at some point, and then I have to, at that point, remember to message on Signal the guy who I know who's the treasurer. It says, hey, can you send me a Dash address? And then I got to pay him that way. And I'm always late because I forget to do things. But it's the same thing of like the treasury cycle. Like, for example, I had no idea how it's just a few days until the voting cycle's over already. I mean, it feels like life goes too fast. We're all so busy. But like having a little ping notification, like so much longer until the voting cycle's over, or then just being able to be like, oh shit, that's like 4 days. And then you're on the train, right? And you're on your phone. You're like, all right, what are these proposals? And sometimes you don't need to, you already know enough about them. You can make voting decisions there on the train. You can be like, oh yeah, DCG, yeah, I don't like that one, this one. Oh yeah, I know the crowd note guys. Sure, I'll do that one. Okay, there we go. And then you're done. And then that increases participation versus like you have a busy day and then you just like, oh, I got to remember to vote. And then you go pick up dinner on the way home. And then the kid's like, and he smashes a plate. And you're like, all right, I got to take care of this. And then it's out. It's out of your head and you don't vote. Like, I'm sure that happens many times.
We don't remind people by sending mm-hmm. out a systematic email to all our members. But what we do is we typically write on our Discord, say 3 or 4 days ahead of the deadline, saying, you know, remember to vote. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if there is an active thread on Reddit, we'll also put it on there. Mm-hmm. So we do try to remind people. Typically, there is already a thread on Reddit, you know, people saying remember to vote, right? So we mm-hmm. just, I assume the CrowdNode members will see that also if they're active there.
Yeah. So we did.
But we could, we could put out a TikTok or something, but we don't do that.
Yeah.
At least not
5
yet.
Days to vote. 5 days to vote.
Oh no! Yeah, please don't make me dance. And so, and don't make Peter dance either. That's even worse.
That's even worse.
Yes. Now, Great Wolf had a question. He says he was wondering about introducing a feature of a tiered model, where the more Dash you deposit, like the lower the fee you pay is. Have you thought about that at all?
Yes.
I'll get a power supply while Andreas answers that.
So there's lots of interesting aspects to, you know, having a tiered approach to incentivize that more people stake more on CrowdNode. And one of the correlating things besides amount would be, are you interested in mm-hmm. in a lock-in period as well? Mm-hmm. And for, you know, a variety of reasons, we haven't, you know, touched that yet. We think there are more interesting things to deliver on first. Mm-hmm. But we haven't ruled it out. And I do see some advantages, but there are also some disadvantages to such a model, you know. Speculating into different disadvantages, but by all means, you know, that could be one of the things we put on a later roadmap to do. XKCD, guy, he had another extreme idea that instead of us doing a proposal to build features, we should just, you know, put up a proposal to increase the rewards size. Mm-hmm. So ask for 100 dash per month to sort of up the ante. So our API would be, 12, 16, 20, 25%. So that there are some interesting ideas around, working with the percentage. That's our take, our cut. But as Peter sort of talked into, with 25 masternodes and 15% going to us, it's not obvious that it's profitable right now. And I'm definitely not gonna charge more or make Crowdnode go higher than 15%. It's sort of, but if the exchange rate grows, I speculate that we might reduce our fees. But as for a tiered model, we haven't settled on it, and we might start working on putting that on a later roadmap if there's a meaningful way to do it.
Yeah. Now, that's kind of interesting. Let me just make sure if there's no other questions before I throw in my ridiculous comment, because I do have one. But so far, it sounds like a great roadmap altogether. It seems like this is something that people really are looking forward to. And already people are saying, oh, I need to buy more Dash for this and stuff, which is already pretty great. That's always what you want to hear. Now, I have a little bit of a silly idea, or at least might sound silly, might sound less silly in the future. But something kind of came up in discussions about Masternode participation and voting. And I sort of had an idea on a protocol level of paying Masternodes more if they were active, if they voted every month, with the default option being abstain. So that, let's just say instead of, this gets 600 yes votes, 100 no votes, and the rest don't vote, it passed. It gets 600 yes, 100 no, and like 3,800 abstain, for example. Just everyone just to be active. And it's not to just pay people, it's not just to pay people to do whatever. It's just to pay people to show up. And as soon as they show up, it's like almost like a reminder, a monetized reminder. Because once you log in and vote, then you're like, all right, maybe I'll actually look at these things. It's almost like a monetized reminder. That'd be an interesting thing to, have you thought of baking in something like that to basically incentivize people to vote?
No, but it not that thought in particular, but we do have another feature that might be a good time to sort of advocate for right now. If you are a MNO non-participating in the voting, you can basically delegate your voting power to us. It's a feature we've had for 2.5 years, and it's I haven't checked how many are using it right now, but that is sort of a way to, respect that the crowd has an opinion, and they might even have a better opinion than you're able to get from reading the proposals in the train or not reading them and just, wild guessing for and against based on the headlines. So that's an awesome feature that if you even incentivize that financially on the protocol level would ideally make it beneficial for MNOs that don't really care on the DAO and the governance to delegate it to the crowd.
Yeah.
I think that not to change the subject away from that point, but it's of course a good point that you can delegate a vote. But to address your point, Joel, I think one thing that sort of immediately springs to mind is the elephant in the room, and that is the fact that a lot of exchanges have an awful lot of Dash. And they don't necessarily give a shit about the project. Sorry, pardon my French.
It's true.
And if you start paying people or MNOs extra to vote, we might poke the bear a little bit, and then all of a sudden have exchanges that just cast 500 random votes, or just vote no to everything, or something ridiculous that will completely ruin the system that sort of works now, even though it's in a frail state.
Yes, that's why I would like it to be a default abstain, So they have to actually make an intelligent decision to not abstain. So then you'd get everyone would participate with an abstain vote. And then some people, while they're there, would be like, you know what? I might do something different. And I mean, it unfortunately does make it a little bit of a... unfortunately, Dash stakeholders, whether they're exchanges or not, are still part of the system and have the vote. And that's kind of the way it's designed. And
absolutely. But I think if you have an exchange that has 500 votes or even more, mm-hmm. We're better off them not voting than voting randomly just to increase their reward.
Yeah. Well, here's another idea on that, which was kind of the first ridiculous bit that I thought of, but I figured I'd go for a less ridiculous one first. But how about issuing NFTs to consistent voters to where, like, for example, if you vote, you have a perfect voting record, you get the CrowdNode Perfect Voting Record Award NFT. And then, I mean, it sounds silly, but I honestly have a lot of monetary value in the future where it's like, well, I got these, and then they can then sell them and then make money on that. So then people will be incentivized to, like, there's a gamifying through NFTs, the participation system, or even like, you know, I participated in CrowdNode Node 50. The 50 node NFT, and then everyone who
handing out badges left, right, and center.
Because it doesn't cost, I mean, it depends on the platform you use. Hopefully there'd be Dash platform NFTs at that point, maybe. But whatever it is, it doesn't cost very much to give that value to people. Yet it's like creating value from nothing almost, because they would value that, having those NFTs, but you wouldn't have to pay money to make it happen, really. And then you could kind of, by gamifying the system, it not only make it fun, but it would also make it to where you actually encouraged better behavior through doing that.
Yes,
that would be awesome. And then somehow in Dash platform, you have the whole user database. You can sort of flash your NFTs you've earned somehow.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine
that would be
like
sweet.
XKCD, for example, maybe he's not into NFTs, but can you imagine him just saying, like, flashing his case of, like, the most consistent voter, or, like, you know, just being able to kind of show that stuff off. And I mean, sure, there'll be like a market for resale on that kind of thing too, where some people would be like, oh, it's the original CrowdNode one. And then someone buys it, and then the initial person gets some, especially if you could do, because the way a lot of NFTs are set up with a percentage of every resale going to like the original holder, if CrowdNode could issue itself the NFTs first, and then give them to people so that it would be the original, it would get, CrowdNode could make a profit off of NFT resales of these milestones. And then there's another revenue stream for the company that could offset, you know, offset rates in some way or something. But anyway, they're just a few, it's a little more involved at that point. It's a little more, it's off the beaten path, but it could be a fun idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I hope that
Public
wouldn't sell his first NFT that he won in the Christmas riddle 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. That would probably be, the first NFT would have to put out there and then send to him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that was worth, what was it, one dash or something?
I think it was one dash. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. I remember the riddle. Let me do a last check for questions, just to make sure there's no one else. I think we're probably at the end of this though. So it's been a great chat so far. Thanks for coming on, everyone. Because this podcast is not funded by the Dash Network, I get to shill whatever the hell I want. So vote for the CrowdNode proposal. There's a proposal I'm a part of that's also in the Dash Marketing Hub. If you like the work we're doing, you can vote for that one as well. Obviously use CrowdNode because you can vote. And you can vote, have an outsized impact of your vote because of people who don't vote. If you're a masternode and if you have a masternode, a full node, and you just do not have time to vote, it's like, yeah, I get it. I should vote, but I just like, I haven't found someone to delegate it to. Delegate it to CrowdNode, you know? Let them vote, the wisdom of the crowds, right? Let that decide things and then get things going. And yeah, definitely if you have Dash sitting on exchanges, shame on you, pull it off, put it into CrowdNode or do your own things. And yeah, I think that's it. Any parting thoughts?
No, we could. I could say something a bit humoristic and presidential, right? No.
Yeah, go for it. Please go for it.
Ask but, not what Crowdnote can do for you, but ask what you can do for Crowdnote.
Yeah.
And then thanks for voting for us, right, and supporting us.
Yes, of course. Sounds great. Well, thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week for the regular news podcast I do. But in 2 weeks, there's going to be another Dash podcast. So that'll be great. And now it's time for the after party, which is just like this, except it's not recorded. It's not publicly streamed, just a private little room. As many people as you want. At one point, we got like 17 people in the after party at one point. It was hopping at that point. But if you want to get into the after party, you can either go to the Dash Discord, which is staydashy.com. I'm going to paste that into the chat. And then you just start asking around, hey, where's the after party? I want to do an after party. And then I'll let you in. Or anywhere you can communicate with me directly, whether it's Twitter direct message, whether it's, you know, Telegram, wherever else, just ask me about the after party and I'll plug you in. And that's about it. And finish commenting on Odyssey. Fantastic. Well, thanks very much, gentlemen. And everyone else, I'll see you either in the after party or next week. And yeah, have a great weekend. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, subscribe so you don't miss an episode and donate to support the show by going to my Cointree page. That's cointr.ee/thedesertlinks and leave a message with your donation. Check out the show's sponsors. Live on Crypto with BitRefill. Buy absolutely anything with crypto with Shop and Bit. Avoid content censorship with Odyssey. Protect your privacy online with NordVPN. Get paid to search with Presearch. All links are in the show notes.